This recording is being made by Patricia Robinson, committee member of the Rowlands Castle Historical Society. The interviewee is Mike Driver, a member of the society, who came to live in Rowlands Castle at approximately 2016, when he was already retired. The purpose of making this recording is for archiving the history of Rowlands Castle. And the date of this recording is the 2nd of March 2022. The reference is 22/3. Welcome, Mike. Would you like to start off by just telling us how you came to live in Rowlands Castle?
Yeah, thank you. Susie and I came down to live in Rowlands Castle almost by mistake. I was in business and came down to this area. Saw Emsworth. We'd been looking for somewhere to live, and I thought, well, that's just the place. I went home, back up to Chobham, where we lived, and I said, I think I've found the place we should go and look for a house. And Susie was very enthusiastic, and we came down here and had a look round, and sure enough, we decided this is where we'd like to be. We concentrated on Emsworth to begin with, but eventually decided that Rowlands Castle was a far better bet. We liked the idea that you were midway between the sea and the hills, and we also liked the idea that it was a real community that you could see in plan when you were just going around it. So we decided that we'd look around Rowlands Castle, and sure enough, we finished up in Glendale, which I must say has been a very nice place to live, and I would buy somewhere there again if I was in the same situation. We found a house that was in the 70s, built in the 70s, and the house itself required quite a lot of work to it, because it had never been touched since the person who retired from it, or actually unfortunately died in it, had lived their life there, and that was it. So we did a lot of playing around with it, great fun, and especially thanks to one or two local people who came along and did brickwork and everything else, but most important of all, Sean Morris, who was a local builder, was an absolute wonderful person to work with, and together we played around with this house, I think for about the best part of 6 or 8 months, which was great fun. And eventually we decided that that was enough, and we set about to try and make a life. Now, we looked at various places around the village, and we were very attracted to go down to Westbourne to go to church. And sure enough, we both of us found that Westbourne Church was to our taste, and we joined in there, and we found that the majority of our time is probably spent down in Westbourne with friends that we've made through the church. However, the great thing about Rowlands Castle, as far as I'm concerned, has been the Rowlands Castle Historical Society. It was rather mockingly referred to as the Rowlands Castle Hysterical Society by some of our early friends, but nevertheless, it has provided me with a great deal of interest, and I'm delighted to be part of the organisation and to be able to contribute. I suppose I come from a background I was trained as an architect, I worked as an architect, I've been a university lecturer in architecture, and then from that I became chief executive of the Brick Development Association. And the Brick Development Association is really the trade association for the brick industry. Now, as far as I was concerned, this was the most wonderful job. I went there in 2002 as the chief executive, and I just found it so interesting to be part of an industry, whereas before I'd either been part of a private practice or else in an academic institution. And certainly living and working in the brick industry was really great fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Eventually, all the good things come to an end, and I retired about 2014. And since then, I've been teaching and just generally keeping my hand in with lecturing and about bricks and brickwork all around the country in various universities and our practices of architecture. And I found it a very good way to spend time now that I'm not permanently employed. So, coming back to Roland's Castle, and in a way the reason that I think I was asked to come here was that it's well known that there was a considerable brickworks in this village, and it was a very important part of the village at the time. The brickworks, of course, came into prominence about 1830, and as the railway came through and people were able to make bricks and put them into railway wagons and distribute them around the country, then of course if you were a strong brickworks, you had a very good market, and you could certainly get bricks from here to almost anywhere, but most importantly I think to London. And there are some big buildings that were built in London from the bricks that were made in Roland's Castle. I didn't know the brickworks as a brickworks. I simply knew it as an area where bricks were made. And when I arrived here, of course, there was a builder's merchant, who I'm sure most people will remember, on the site. And now, of course, there are houses in two areas up there, which, when I first saw it, I couldn't believe that there was space enough for these houses. But once they started opening up around the works, those houses were made, and they make a very considerable contribution to the village itself. But back in the 1830s, when they sort of started off the brickworks, what you found was that people were starting to make bricks, not out in the open air, as they had been doing, but they were starting to make systems whereby you filled up ovens or areas where you took the bricks into a large enclosed area and you built them up in a framework, and then you set light to them, and sure enough the bricks then burnt, and they would burn for possibly 3 or 4 weeks. And as they burnt through, you would keep an eye on the way that the bricks were being burnt. And what you had then was a series of these kilns, which are side by side. And they were so designed that the fire in one kiln would jump into the next kiln and start the fire again in that kiln. Meanwhile, of course, you were waiting to prepare the next kiln in line, and you then stuff that with bricks that hadn't been burnt, i.e. green bricks, and sure enough, at about 400 degrees centigrade, the fire would jump through into the next kiln. And so you had a continuous system of making bricks by opening the kiln, taking out the bricks that had been made, putting fresh bricks in, or fresh green bricks in, closing up the kiln and waiting for it to burn. Meanwhile, of course, the fire was progressing itself round. And that was the sort of system that was used in the brickworks here. The precise details are not something that I'm aware of, but I know that there are people in the village who do know about it. And when I came to talk about bricks and brickwork at the Historical Society, I used their knowledge and their information, which they kindly gave me, to make sure that the lecture was focused on Roland's Castle, although to be fair, it was generally about bricks and brickwork and the way it had developed throughout the country, and also, of course, through the ages. Because we all know that if you look at the 11th chapter of Genesis, you'll see that the Tower of Babel was made from bricks. Now, whether that's true or not, I really don't know. But what it does tell you is that bricks have been around for a long, long time. And whenever there's been a problem, there's always been a new development. The Romans came to this country. They found places to make bricks. They made sure that we all knew how to make bricks. But when they left in about 430, the idea of making bricks seemed to sort of go out of the window. However, eventually, sort of 1200, 1300, because of connections with Europe, one thing and another, people began to get back to the idea of making bricks. And of course, bricks are very useful because, unlike stone, you can make a brick very quickly. You can even mould it. You can change its shape and everything else. And so you can make quite intricate buildings very simply by using brick. And sure enough, brick came down through the ages, and 1666 is the great period you look for, because that's the Great Fire of London. And of course, what happened was that people realised that the Fire of London was created because the fire went from house to house, and it was through timber framed buildings mostly. And the very earliest building regulations were brought in then, and they simply said, you've got to have a fireproof wall between various dwellings. And that's exactly how they came about, that bricks were then became much more popular. And you can go right through the Victorian times and even up to today, and you'll still find that people are making bricks and building with bricks and living in buildings made of bricks, and they enjoy it, and it's a very good way of going on. One of my most favourite places in this area is St Hubert's, known as the little church in the field. St Hubert's was somewhere that Susie and I went to very soon after arriving here, and we found that it was quite a remarkable little building, not least for the fact that it's got these wonderful wall paintings from about 1330, the way that it just sits by itself out in the field, and all the thoughts about how it came to be, why it's there, how it was used and everything else, just press in on you as you go to see it.
How old is it?
I'd have thought that it probably, the building itself probably dates from about 1030, 1050, that sort of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to check that for you. But whether there was ever a gathering of little dwellings around it, we really don't know. It would be wonderful to find out that it was a village and that the village has somehow disappeared. And the only thing you can say is that very probably if there were buildings around it, they would have been made in timber. And consequently, it's not surprising that if there were buildings and they're made in timber, that they've disappeared. There were, of course, in this area, Roman villas, and there is certainly some evidence of a Roman villa up near the St Hubert's Church, and that in itself is fascinating. But once more, there are people around here who have lived here for a long time and know an awful lot more about St Hubert's than I do. I'm just a new boy, and I'm loving the idea of being able to go and look at the place and see it and enjoy it. All these churches are in problems today because what's happening is that the congregations are reducing because of old age, and there are fewer and fewer people to replace people, and the buildings themselves get much more and more expensive to retain. So it's a sort of a never-ending circle of disaster, potentially, against the pleasure of the building. And quite what's going to happen to many, many buildings which belong to the Church of England, I really don't know, but I just worry that in maybe 12, 24, 48 years, we're not going to have buildings like St Hubert's used in the way that St Hubert's is now, i.e. as a little parish church. It's an interesting problem, and it's one that's got to be solved. But what I can say is that St Hubert's is so much of an iconic place, where because of its siting, because of the way it's made and everything else, And the fact that it has got some very keen people who want to see St. Hubert's survive from year to year to year. And we are at the moment just about to engage ourselves in a major reorganisation of the work that needs to be done to make sure this building is going to survive, which I find to be a very exciting time in its life, and something which I look forward to working with as time goes on. Looking around though, generally, the other thing that always strikes me about Rowland's Castle is probably thanks to the railway, it's a marvellous centre. And if you go and look at the way that old paths and old tracks have tended to congregate on around Rowland's Castle, it's often to do with the fact that where they are, where the railway is now, is that people can use the railway to come in, can move out from here, walk around, even go to another station and catch the train and come back, or go on further. And this, one of the great joys of this area is finding out the various different paths and tracks and things that one can go on for walks. I think you could almost do a different walk a day for a year, and you wouldn't even exhaust the possibilities then. Of course, the really sort of notable ones, the South Downs Way, which comes from Winchester and runs right down to the cliffs, the White Cliffs. They are quite extraordinary, and that's a wonderful track to follow. It's about 90 miles. And of course, it's the only one of its kind that actually sits completely and entirely within a national park, which of course is the area that surrounds us here, and is a terrific resource that we can all use and go out and see. And when you think about this area as a whole, there were people living here and working here since time immemorial, and because of the way in which routes are planned and the fact that people leaving the sea and wanting to go inland had to find ways to get over the downs, that of course has begun to make a structure for people to move around this countryside. It's a very definite sort of structure that these routes go back up over the downs, and they also come off, of course, the roads which go along parallel to the seashore. So the area itself is full of fascination, and it's something which we've really enjoyed about coming back to, coming to Rowland's Castle, and we hope that we'll be able to enjoy it for times on. One of the points about Rowland's Castle that was very attractive to us when we thought about coming to live here is the fact that as a community, it's very well served with things like doctors, vets, cafes, wonderful stores, not only for ironmongery and things, but also for all the food. And at the moment, it's a very easy place to live because it's so well served. I'm sure that in the past, people will tell you there were shops and places which were doing many, many different things. And I'm sure that that's what made the structure of the place so interesting, because people, of course, would go from shop to shop and walk around and meet each other. Whereas today we tend to sort of be congregate in certain single places. But that's one of the attractions, I think, of Rowland's Castle. You are able to be here, to still see other people using all the facilities and enjoying the use of the facilities. And when you think of that also, you begin to realise that, you know, you can play tennis here, you can go on the swings, you can watch cricket, you could see football. There's all sorts of things that are going on in the village which just make it a really interesting place to be. We've never really got into the village fair, although we enjoy going to see it every year, and I quite enjoy the idea that the Historical Society has a stand in there, and we talk to people about things in the village. But actually, as being keen villagers, I must admit that we are not really in the top rank. We enjoy living here, but we do spend quite a lot of our time away from the village. But that doesn't mean we don't appreciate it when we come back.